Support for this KQED podcast comes from Bay Meadows, an urban village in San Mateo. Fitness and movies in the park, Caltrain, artisan eateries, fun for the kids, all just a hop from your front door. Homes now selling and leasing, baymeadows.com.
What happens when your mother tells you this?
I don't care what you guys do in your life, as long as you're not a drug addict, a criminal, or a homosexual.
It's Stories from the Leap. A new podcast from KQED. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, and kqed.org/theleap.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Sarah Silverman is best known for her incisive, edgy comedy, but she's done everything from stand-up to film, television, memorable online videos, and a New York Times bestseller titled The Bedwetter, Stories of Courage, Redemption, and Pee. But Silverman's latest project is a dramatic turn from all that. In the film I Smile Back, she plays a suburban mom in a downward spiral of alcohol, cocaine, and sex. It's playing at the Mill Valley Film Festival tonight, where she'll be receiving a festival award for her performance. Sarah Silverman, welcome to Forum.
Hi.
Congratulations on the film, which I was able to see last week.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
Sure. And I have to admit, it was a hard film to watch. And I think in part because I found myself feeling very sympathetic for the character that you play, Lainey Brooks, this suburban mother, as I described earlier, who's in the throes of an intense addiction. But yet at the same time, she appears to have everything, right? A loving husband, kids, a beautiful home. And that tension just plays out through the whole film.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is that people are going to watch this and how they feel about this character is going to completely depend on their own life experience, you know, the prism of their own experience that they're seeing this through. So I think people will have sympathy for her, empathy, or maybe even total disdain, you know, depending on what kind of side of this dynamic they've been through in their, you know, we're all trying to just kind of survive our childhoods, I think. And so I think it's a very subjective character in that way, you know.
Yeah, she abuses herself. She's abused by others in the film. What drew you to the role?
First of all, it was an opportunity that presented itself that I don't get often. And I just think I've been in a lot of therapy. I've found a great therapist, my most recent therapist in the past few years. And it's just been so fortifying in everything I do, in my stand-up and everything, just learning about human behavior through my own life and the dynamics with the people in my life and learning about human behavior and just that, you know, her childhood is something that she is trying, that is completely influencing her present. And by the way, her childhood is not the worst childhood. There are people with way worse childhoods, if you're going to compare and contrast, and that come through it with aplomb. But I don't know if you pronounce the B. I still haven't gotten an answer on that. But this just life is handled differently by different people, yeah. And we all have different capacities. And, you know, they say if you live in the past, that's depression. And if you live in the future, that's anxiety. And that's why you have to live in the present, ideally. I don't think anyone's mastered it. But it's a practice. And she lives in the future we all tell ourselves horror stories. What if, what if, what if I never write another joke? What if I never fall in love? What if they hate me? What if? And she really exists in that what if and that torture, that self kind of torture. And there's really no room for anything else. You know, she's so afraid she's going to ruin her kids, or she's going to, you know, taint them or abandon them. And in a way, it's like it's a self-fulfilled prophecy, because there isn't room. There isn't space for actually hope or anything else, you know.
I want to play a clip actually from the film. that speaks to what you're talking about. And it's actually the one where your character, Lainey Brooks, is seeing a therapist. And the therapist in this clip speaks first.
So where would you like to start?
Really?
Really.
What's more interesting for you, the daddy issues or the drugs?
Well, I like to start with the daddy issues because it's a very organic segue into the drugs.
Mine's boring. My dad left when I was 9. That's the whole story. He kissed me goodnight, and that's the last time I saw him. So, drugs?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Can you tell me why you haven't spoken again?
He didn't call me.
Why didn't you call him?
Because I didn't know where he lived.
Oh.
Do you want to talk a little bit about doing that scene? You've mentioned that you're in therapy, you've benefited from it. Did you draw from those experiences for that particular scene?
No, because my experience with therapy is me seeking it out and wanting to be there. And this is a woman who is, doesn't feel that she should be there and probably knows deep down she should. But that's the wonderful actor, Terry Kinney, who's spectacular in it.
So that's something that you're seeking out now. What about you? I think at a young age, you went to see a therapist about depression. Is that right? Or concerns about that?
Oh, yeah. My experience with clinical depression started when I was 13, and my parents sent me to a lot of shrinks. And I know I wasn't resistant because I did want help. I wanted to not feel this way. I wanted to unsee what I felt like I was seeing, which was we're all going to die alone.
Wow.
And
how old were you?
13. And that we can all be together, but we are totally alone behind our eyes. And I just couldn't unsee that, that horrible realization.
We're talking with Sarah Silverman. She's an actor, comedian, a writer. She stars in the new film, I Smile Back, which opens in San Francisco on Friday, October 30th. People write a lot about the fact that it's almost a cliche for comedians wanting to be seen as serious actors to take a role like this. Was that part of your calculation?
No, I am woefully unambitious. I never plan. I don't know if I'm not ambitious, but I never have a game plan. I never really have, have a career trajectory in my mind and that's planned. And this just came to me. The author of the book heard me on Howard Stern talking about depression because I was talking about my book, The Bedwetter, and really connected and sent me the book. And they said, well, we're going to write a screenplay. Can we, there's a Hollywood term, attach you to the, and I said, yeah, sure. I mean, I didn't think about it at all because the truth is it didn't occur to me it would get made. Most movies don't get made. And then when it became a reality, it was about a couple years later, and I was like, they emailed me and I emailed back, yay, and pressed send, and then just descended to the floor of my bathroom in a ball in anxiety, just thinking, I can't do this. I can't do this. And I kind of realized in that fit of panic that this is the state Lainey exists in. And so I thought, well, maybe I can do it because I'm doing it right now.
Well, what made you think you couldn't? Because I know you've talked about how comedy and drama are deeply intertwined in many ways.
They definitely are adjacent at the very least. I think there's a lot of darkness in comedy. There's a lot of darkness in comedians. They usually come from a dark place, and
it seems you drew on that to play this for sure.
Well, I had stuff to draw from, and in my own life and lives around me, and just my own kind of navigating of depression. And I may have gone one direction. She went in a way where, you know, there's a lot of fear in realizing that we have no control over our lives. You know, we don't know what's going to happen next. We've never predicted anything in our lives. That can also, if you let it, become a comfort, you know. But for her, I think when you feel like you have no control in your life, you want to be able to control something. And I think what she could control was her own destruction, you know. Oh my God, look at me. I'm an actress talking about my character like another person. That was exciting.
It was. I mean, it sounds like there have been a lot of surprises for you in terms of this experience, one of which was how much you'd get into the character.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I think part of how I comforted my own self in embarking on shooting this movie was, between action and cut, it will be heavy, but then, you know, then we can have fun in between scenes. We'll laugh. It will be fun. We could do bits. And it wasn't that way. It was an amazing experience. I'm so grateful for it. And I'm really proud of this movie. But I'm so glad I didn't know ahead of time that there would be a weight you carry around when you need access to all these heavy emotions, and then you need to kind of cover that because she's covering it, you know, but it still kind of sits on your lap between scenes. And I felt like a toddler that didn't know what to do with their feelings. You know, I found myself acting out in ways, and I'm glad I didn't know that going in, because I would have definitely tried to get out of the project.
We're talking with actor, comedian, and writer Sarah Silverman. She's in the new film, I Smile Back. If you have a question for Sarah Silverman, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786.
If you have the guts.
There's your challenge. She's throwing it down. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on Facebook or on our website, kqed.org/forum. Kai writes, I remember she did some stuff for the Obama campaign back in 2008 in the Great Schlep promo. You know, actually, I think we have a clip of the Great Schlep. If we could pull that up, that would be great, just to give our listeners a flavor of what you did back in 2008. I actually remember this really well.
If Barack Obama doesn't become the next president of the United States, I'm going to blame the Jews. I am. And I know you're saying, like, oh my God, Sarah, I can't believe you're saying this. Jews are the most liberal, scrappy, civil rightsy people there are. Yes, that's true. But you're forgetting a whole large group of Jews that are not that way, and they go by several aliases. Nana, Papa, Zadie, Bubby, plain old grandma and grandpa. These are the people who vote in Florida. And the Florida vote can make or break an election. If you don't think that's true, why don't you think back to two elections ago when a little man named Al Gore got by Florida? I'm making this video to urge you, all of you, to schlep over to Florida and convince your grandparents to vote Obama. It can make the difference.
Kai wants to know how you feel about Clinton. I also want to know how you feel about President Obama. You've put yourself out there for him several times.
I believe in him. I really think, you know, I think that when we look back on his presidency, we'll see how much he's done. There's a lot that he was not able to do. There's a lot he did. I mean, healthcare alone and so many things. I don't really understand this trade deregulation thing.
You mean the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
I just think a government, I might sound really not bright, but I think government is there to regulate big business and corporations so that people aren't taken advantage of, and that regulation is important. You know, it's for people.
Well, how do you feel about Clinton? She's come out against it. Do you like Clinton overall?
I, I do. I really like Hillary Clinton a lot. I also really like Joe Biden. And I'm, of course, a Bernie Sanders person. I adore Bernie Sanders. And I really love, I really do. I think those are three great choices. I love Hillary. I love how strong she is. I love her stance on women's rights and Planned Parenthood and everything. What I love about Bernie is that he's not at all for sale. He isn't taking money from Goldman Sachs or any of those places. And I'm inspired by that. You know, people say, well, then he can't win because he's not doing that. And I don't know. I just think that that isn't a reason to not support someone. Whoever is the nominee, I think it's a whole bunch of great choices, you know.
Well, we've got a lot of listeners who'd like to talk with you. And let's go to Jocelyn in Boise, Idaho. Hi, Jocelyn.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Go ahead.
I saw this film at Sundance.
I Smile Back. Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing experience. I think she's so funny. And so went into it with an open mind thinking, oh, man, this is going to be interesting. And I have to tell you, it was the best, worst movie I've ever seen. It was...
Oh, wow.
It was gut-wrenching. It was, I mean, you could relate to it. I mean, not, you know, in a lot of ways, but as a parent, you know, as a person, as a human. But she, her performance was amazing. I mean, I cried. I laughed. I think people need to go see this.
Well, Joss, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jocelyn. Let's go to Alan in Santa Rosa. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Hi, go ahead.
I just kind of wanted to kind of get her opinion on the role of, you know, women in comedy. It seems like over the last, you know, 5 to 7 years or so between Sarah herself, Amy Schumer, Tina Fey, et cetera, women and women's issues are not only taking sort of a spotlight, but women are getting a lot more opportunities to start in leading roles, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. Thanks, Alan.
You know, I agree.
Yeah. You have actually talked about how you feel like women are dominating comedy. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's funny because in interviews, there's this one relic left of the question of boys club, women and comedy. And, you know, is comedy a boys club? You know, what's it like being a woman in comedy? And I was like, that question is the last vestige, is the last relic of a time that I feel like has finally kind of gone by, you know.
Is it also fair to say that almost this question of if women can be funny, which seemed to dominate also women in comedy a few years ago, that also has calmed down? Or do you think that?
Yeah, I always thought, like, you know, what was it? Jerry Lewis said women aren't funny or something like that. And if you're going to get all hot and bothered about a zillion-year-old man, you know, saying women aren't funny, I mean, then you probably aren't funny. You know, like, women, you know, I mean, not all women are funny, not all men are funny, but women are in comedy are a really major presence, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm a feminist and a fighter for women's rights, but when people, like, I don't want to, my humble opinion about, like, the talk show landscape, and I'm really loving the talk shows, the nighttime talk shows that are out right now, it is all men. But I think a part of that reason is because, I mean, I know for a fact several women who were asked to do talk shows, you know, and...
Including you.
Maybe. And so it's not like the opportunity isn't out there. I think, you know, not all women in comedy want to do talk shows. It might be, you know, I don't know what my point is other than I don't think it's like women are desperate to host talk shows and they're being kept from it.
Well, what do you think is driving sort of the dominance that you're talking about, that you see of women in comedy? What's driving it? Why now?
Well,
do you think there are things that have...
Women in general are starting to... be less afraid of their own power and strength and vulnerability as well. Like, you know, there was, like, you know, the 80s of, like, women and shoulder pads in the workforce, but I think there still was, like, a fear of vulnerability, a fear of being fully a woman. You know, it was a woman in a man's world acting like a man. Even when I started in comedy, I was taught, you know, if you're a real comic, then your jokes could be told by a man and work just as well. And you know, Paula Poundstone, who's brilliant, but they guy comics would say, see, Paula's great because a man could do her material and it would still work. She's not just talking about tampons and this. And it's funny because we were so, I was kind of bullied away from talking about a female experience, you know? And now I feel like not only are women strong in comedy, but they're unafraid of making it a female experience, and that there are women that and catering to their own selves as an audience, women.
One of the other things I find intriguing as you bring up this issue of fear is this idea that you've talked about the need for comedians to change with the times, that you're not so concerned about, you know, what some have described as the onslaught of political correctness, and that there are some jokes that you told, you know, 10 years ago that are racial jokes, for example, that you wouldn't say now. So what has led to you feeling this way? Because I know in a lot of ways you also have to spend a lot of time sort of defending comedy that offends people as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, people think I'm like turning all PC or whatever. You know, I stand by what I said, which is it's gray matter, first of all. And I believe that you should, you know, as a comic, you want to do what you think is funny and stand by that. But what I believe is funny, what I think is funny, changes with growing and learning and getting new information. If you, as a human being, can't let yourself be changed with new information, then you're old, you know. And so I just think I understand. Listen, I mean, and this was said by Jerry Seinfeld, who I worship and adore. And I'm not challenging anything. I'm just saying, what I hate about doing colleges, if it's a bad experience, is just like looking at a sea of cell phones, you know, comedy is something where you want to feel connected to an audience and look at people's eyes and have an experience as a room, you know, people in a room. And it's just a bummer when there's this division between me and the audience of just, you know, I don't like when they're just empty vessels through which Facebook expresses itself. I want to talk to them, you know. But in terms of the way the world is going, I think that the youth and students tend to lead the way of change and be on the right side of history. And I want to be open to that. You know, there was a time, like I said, I would say, that's so gay. You know, I'd say, you know, I'm from Boston. I say gay, like that's so lame, like gay. I have gay friends. It has nothing to do with that. And I would defend it. And I suddenly just realized that I was the old guy going, I say colored. What? I have colored friends. That's just what we say. And is it so hard to change language with the times? It took about a day and a half, you know, and it's just, listen, you don't have to. You can stick by your guns. Good for you. But I enjoy changing with new information and growing. And it doesn't bother me. I don't feel, you know, put out by it.
Well, let's go to more calls. Let's go to Catherine in Menlo Park. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you doing?
Well, thanks. Go ahead, please.
Great. I was just calling to let you know that, gosh, I think it was about a year ago, you did a piece about payday lenders on TV, and it was really funny. And we at the time happened to be talking about banning payday lenders in Menlo Park. I'm currently the mayor of Menlo Park. So it was really timely when you did the bit exposing how horrible payday lenders are. And we watched and we listened really closely and asked some questions in the city council meeting, some based on the information you provided. And we ended up banning payday lenders in the city of Menlo Park. And
That's
so
amazing.
I just wanted to let you know that sometimes, you know, what you do is really funny and it's entertaining and it's great. But I wanted to also thank you and let you know that you are actually making an impact in the world as well. And I just wanted to let you know that. And thank you so much for everything you do, because not only are you funny and entertaining, but you're actually informing as well.
Thank you, Mayor. That is so cool. And I just want to say, you know, usually I write the things that I do, but that was a piece that was for the brilliant John Oliver show. And it was actually written by the writers. I may have improvised a couple little moments, but it was really conceived and written by the writers at John Oliver. I got to give them credit for that.
Thanks so much. And I want to read what Billy has to say, which is, I love her. Tell her thanks for everything. She's so brave and so funny. She paved the way for Amy Schumer and all the other brave ladies. Can't wait to see the movie. Jill, you have a question about bravery. Jill in Oakland, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, Sarah Silverman. You're the best.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to ask you this question about how you have struggled with anxiety, and so do I. But yet you are really, really brave. And how do you – that's such a paradox. Do you ever think about that?
You know, it's funny because I'm – you know, we're all different, a whole bunch of different things, you know. And I can be brave, and I do things that maybe other people wouldn't do. But I also – have plenty of days where I'm paralyzed and in a ball, and I just have to believe that it passes, and then it does. And my mom said one time, she just said, you know, sometimes all you have to do is be brave. And it just, she said it as if she was saying pass the salt, but it affected me so much, because I think what she meant by it was sometimes you just have to exist, and by virtue of that, you're being brave. Just keep living and existing through something, and meant a lot to me. It just maybe more than what she meant. I don't know, but.
Well, Sarah Silverman, thank you so much for coming in today. Sarah Silverman, actor, comedian, writer, star of the new film I Smile Back, which opens in San Francisco on Friday, October 30th. And she'll also be at the Mill Valley Film Festival tonight.
Great Halloween flick. Different kind of horror.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our interns are Jeremy Spiegel and Latoya Tools, and our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.